Welcome to Walking Africville, a historic audio walking tour of Africville Park. You know, this wasn't always a park. It was once part of a thriving community, and it also used to be my home. My name is Paula Grant Smith, and I have a story to tell you.
Africville spanned these park grounds and stretched out even further towards Fairview. The community was divided by two sets of tracks, the upper and the lower tracks. There were three sections. There was Big Town, up the road, and around the turn. Africville has always had a strong community spirit. This place holds the memories of families who survived and thrived here for generations. Families who fished from these shores, played on the land, practiced their faith, and cared for one another. As we walk through, you'll hear myself and others talk about growing up in Africville. I'll be showing you the way through, so when you hear my voice, I'll tell you the path to follow. You can pause the audio at any time using the controls of your mobile device. If you arrive at one of our stops before the story ends, wait for me there. When you're ready, walk down the gravel path on the left and stop at a point where the path split into many lanes. Now look to your left where the playground sits. Africville was also like one big playground.
In the summertime, we played horseshoes, baseball.
We might be playing, we had what we called the Southwest End. That was down in front of my house where I live. And sometimes we would get a ball game going.
And the young kids, we would start off the games. Oh gosh, sometimes we didn't have bats, so we would have sticks. And we would have pitcher, sometimes we'd even have an umpire. And the game, and we'd have everybody on bases, and Oak Field, we would have guys there like on the tracks. And it was almost like a carnival, because it was like the whole community came out and they all got involved with our baseball games. But it was amazing, the baseball games, and it would last for about a couple hours. And then the older guys, they would start a ball game also, and us young kids would just sit back and watch them play. We had Uncle Bunny's store was right there. He made a lot of money on pop and candy and stuff like that because all the kids and everybody would go to his store.
And one thing we used to do was annoy my Uncle Bunny.
And we'd be down there banging and banging on the door and stuff. He'd never be in it. He'd be up the house and hollering his name, right? Come on down. We want something in the store. And yeah, so whenever he'd come down and he'd be mad. Stop bothering me.
And he was cranky. So we used to put our coats over our heads and fall in the store door just to tease him. And he used to come out around the counter and chase us. He was angry, but not angry because he was used to us. We used to take the broom and put it on the wire on us and just sweep it back and forth just to annoy him, right? But yeah, those are mischief things that we used to get up to. Let's make a right turn here. Since there are two paths to the right, take the path closest to us, the one with the bench on the side. Keep walking until you reach the next junction and wait there. Our whole day was just spent outside being children. You know, we weren't afraid to go anywhere. There wasn't anywhere we couldn't go.
So in the wintertime when we went coasting, we'd go up as far as the high track. And coast right down across the low track and right down across Barrington Street down to Granny Pink's fence. And then if you made a hard turn, you could go right down to where Tibby's Pond was, right? That was a long run and a long way back to walk. And cardboard was number one thing to coast on if you never had a sled or a toboggan, right? But we had, me and my brother and my two cousins, we had an engine bonnet off a car. A truck, and the four of us could get on this thing, and you didn't know which way you were going. Yeah, when you came down that hill, you were in trouble with that thing. If you stayed straight, you were good. If not, you could fly off it and go anywhere. We used that there for even going to get our water, right? We put our buckets on it for our water. And we'd also put our bags of coal on it to drag home, right? It was a tool, really. But we used it for coasting, too.
And we used to come down Uncle Laffy's Hill, we called it. It was a big steep hill.
The hill that we used to coast on was right next to Aunt Du and Uncle Bunny, right? And whenever she washed her floor, she would throw her floor water out on it, right? And that was like a slippery spot. And below that, we built this jump, like a big mound of snow, so that when we hit that ice, we would go airborne. It was fun.
Walk up the path to our left.
Continue along and stop once you reach the fence at the end of the path.
Scan the trees to your left. Do you see that big electrical tower sandwiched between Africville Road and Barrington Street?
To the left of that tower and up the hill is a place we now call the Lookoff.
You can view the entire community from the top of that hill. It used to be part of my neighborhood, which we call Up the Road. Many families lived up there around the upper track, and at the very top was the Basin View Home for Seniors, Rockhead Prison, and the Prison Farm. That hill was one of the entry points into and out of Africville, especially for school children and working folk. It was an important route for work, school, and childhood mischief.
A lot of the women worked in Basin View Hospital. A lot of the women worked there. Actually, that was a good spot for them. They only had to walk up the hill, right?
My mom was a domestic, and then all through her working life, she did domestic, and she retired from the hospital as in housekeeping. Yeah, hardworking woman, as were many of the women from out home.
My mother worked at the Victoria General Hospital in the city.
And Beatrice's mother and my mother, they were trailblazers. My mother worked at Stadacona, and she was a waitress. They would have to be to work early, so my mother and Beatrice's mother, and the snow would be up here to your chest, they would make the path all through around the turn to go up the hill, and they'd walk to work, and they did that every day.
We'd have our breakfast, and then we would go to school. The younger kids would, there was a bus that came out.
There were rules by the school that if you were a certain age, whether the bus was full or not, you couldn't get on the bus.
Once you turned 13, I believe it was, you had to get off the bus and walk. And it was a little bit of a walk. We used to go to Mulgrave Park School, which is now called Highland Park, and walking up over that hill to get up to the school.
And when we were coming home from school, we had to go through that area, right? And in the summertime, Charlie Gross would have big speakers up there, and he'd play old soul music, James Brown. But you'd hear that almost all over Africa, right? Because all of Africa was pretty well down below him, you know? So he would play his music. We used to pick berries up around there.
Raspberries, blueberries, blackberries, they were all there fresh. Just go right out and get a container and sit out there and pick all the berries and take it in and get homemade pie made.
When the prisoners all had the garden all planted and everything, and in the fall when everything was ripe, the cabbages and the turnips and stuff, we'd go and get ours as well at night, right? We would go and get ours, and the police used to chase us. We'd be inside the fence, they'd be just driving in the cars, and we'd run this way, they'd turn around and come back that way, and then we got in the woods, and then we could get away from them, right? Yeah.
Let's take a minute here. See those sets of tracks on the other side of the street? They were called the lower tracks, which ran through all of Africville.
Make sure you listen carefully, because the train could go by at any minute. The railway line, which the government installed here in the 1850s, was both a source of danger and a part of our way of life, a source of income, of materials, and a gathering place for singing and playing music into the night.
Where I lived was what's called around the turn. I had to cross 15 tracks to get to the school bus or whatever. And then the trains used to, sometimes for days the trains be right on these tracks. And that sometimes we might have to go till the end to get across to over the road. If we were catching the bus, we would have to sometimes, as long as the train was a move, go under to get to the bus on the road. And then if we were walking up to the church, we would have to, because sometimes you couldn't hear the trains. And you would have, if you were walking in these wooden things here, the pillars, and this was the dirt road in between them, the tracks, you had to keep looking back to make sure the train was coming.
Back then, when you bought a bag of potatoes, it wasn't a small bag, it was a 75-pound bag of potatoes, right? And it came in like burlap bags, so we'd always have those bags. We'd use those bags like for everything. When the coal cars would come through on the tracks, the conductor would stop the train, and people would get up on the train and they would throw coal off, right? And then we use those same bags, those burlap bags, for the gather up the coal.
And we knew that anytime we needed anything, we would go on the train and
open boxcars. Yeah. If the train was stopped, they had a brake rod. It was a rod in the brake to hold the brake shoe on. Well, we would just take that out and break the seal on the train and use that to pound up there was a wedge in the door. We pound that up and we hold that back, right? And then just slide the door back and then you were good to go.
Guys would get in that boxcar, throw stuff out, and there would be guys running alongside, catching and putting it down, catching, putting it down, yeah. And then try to close that door back up again when we were done, because we didn't want it even open.
A lot of times they would ship everything from army jeeps to grain for animals and stuff in the cars, so sometimes you get good stuff. You may open up a boxcar that had a electric blankets, those are the kind of things, you know, that you got out of those boxcars.
And we would sing on the tracks till late at night.
I would go to bed at night, and we would put up the windows if it was a nice night, and we'd hear the older boys on the tracks singing. We used to say doo-wopping, which is harmonizing now, right? And I would go to sleep, be lulled asleep by them singing, right? Or the train coming through. And they came through often, but you got used to it. But those were the things that lulled you off to sleep. And when those young men used to stand on the crossing, the railroad tracks, and they'd be singing, harmonizing, it was beautiful to hear. It really was. We'd lay there in bed and listen to them, you know, drift off to sleep. Yeah, it was beautiful. They'd be singing those old songs like, I Found My Thrill on Blueberry Hill. You wouldn't know those songs, would you? I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill, where I found you.
Okay, now turn around and take the path to your left, the one that runs parallel with the train tracks.
You'll see a fork in the road ahead, but we're not stopping there. Keep to the left path and walk until you reach the next junction.
You'll see the Africville Museum there in the distance.
The museum is a replica of Seaview United Baptist Church. It was the heart and soul of Africville. The church brought everyone together for Sunday services, special occasions, and always welcomed folks from other faiths.
I'm from the Catholic side. My grandmother was Catholic. My father was Catholic. My mother married my father and turned Catholic. She was Baptist. and all our other relatives were Baptists. But I went to both Baptist and Catholic church. I went to St. Stephen's on top of the hill. And then I'd come up to the church on a Sunday, and I used to go to Sunday school.
Oh, Sundays was, you hear the bell ringing, the church, and you get all dressed up.
We would be off to church. The church was on the main road, down below where my house was. We had to cross the track, and then we would walk up to the church. The grown-ups would be in church, doing their church thing, and the children would be in the vestibule, we called it, learning our Sunday school stuff. And as I got older, us older girls, we taught Sunday school. We would do readings, question and answer, you know, but always learning about the Bible. Yeah, yeah, we grew up in church.
My sisters and I, every Sunday we would perform for the community. And from our church, we'd also visited the other black communities and some white communities that invited us up to sing. We'd come to church on a Sunday, and after church, they invite us to their house and say, Sister Wes, I have a hymn I'd love the girls to learn. So we go to their house, we have a nice lunch, and then they give us the record. I would take it home around the churn, and I would record every word, and we would sing it all that week. We'd come back the next week and sing it in church, a cappella. We never had music behind us. We always, my mother had a system. She said, keep the tune of the hymn in your head. So all we had to concentrate on were the words.
We used to have sunrise services in our church. They'd start at 5 a.m. and the church would be packed. And we'd have Reverend Skeer or Reverend Oliver come out and preach. But everybody made it to sunrise service. Sunrise Easter Sunday. All of us kids used to get dressed up because everybody got a little bonnet and the little shoes and the little socks and the little purse. And we used to walk up over the hill and catch the bus to go downtown and get on for a ferry ride, come back over, and then go back home again. That was our day, our Easter Sunday.
In October, we used to have harvest. The community used to buy fruit. It was a fundraiser for the church. Uncle Pa Carvey, he was the auctioneer, and he would auction the fruit on it. He was good, but he was tough. He would tell you, that's not enough money. He had a bit some more. But that was great because the church was full of people. You could be bidding on what you bought. And if you want to buy it back, it's going to cost you a little more money. But it was for the church.
At the intersection, turn right. Keep walking, passing the next fork in the path. Stay on the right side and stop at the bench up ahead. Take a good look around you. Can you smell the coal and wood-burning stoves that heat the homes? Families are cooking up a storm. Smell those delicious meals being made. Sometimes you could find homemade remedies simmering on the stove. The home was tended to by all members of the family and was also a place for the celebration of life.
We enjoyed our Sunday dinners like corned beef and cabbage as a family. Sunday was a family meal at every household after church.
It would be a big dinner because a lot of times we have people come to visit too, right? And you always cooked enough, always. I mean, like my mom used to cook fish cakes and baked beans and brown bread, and she used to bake and make pies. And then if I knew my auntie was having something else that I liked, I'd skip over there and get a little bit of hers too, you know. But Never without a meal. Never go hungry.
But my grandmother used to come out. She lived in one of the black communities, Cherry Brook. And she used to come out and make all our medicines. She used to boil up onions and molasses on the stove, let it ferment for days, and then feed it to us when we got cold.
It was called goose grease and molasses. Goose grease and molasses, okay? My nephew was very, very sick, and my father made the concoction up and gave it to him for about a week, and then after that, it was gone.
My grandmother could tell you every herb in the woods and what it was good for. And she taught that to my mother. Yeah, my mother had 15 kids. The last son, she delivered herself. She was taught midwifery by her mother-in-law.
We were born by midwives. They were trained under, you know, they were overseen by Dr., was it Delahunt? They oversaw what the work that they did when they born the babies and stuff. But yeah, we had I think Aunt Pink did some of that. Aunt Pink, which would be Hattie Carvery. And my mom, she was a midwife too. She born a lot of people out in Africa. And she born me, and you know, she told me about one set of twins that mom said she told them to keep them. They had to open the drawer, and they were only small babies, and they had them in shoe boxes. She made a bed and stuff for them, kept them warm. She said, for 5 days, don't move them. But what they did, they called their doctor and took the children and moved the children right into the hospital, and one died. And if they had left them there, both of them would have survived. But yeah, we have midwives out there. We had a lot of things going on out there.
Africville was really like one big family. We felt safe amongst each other. You could go to any home and you would be well taken care of, but sometimes that safety was put in jeopardy.
Every spring or every second year, the police, along with their dog catcher, would come and they would shoot anybody's dog that they saw. I can remember my mother saying, go get the dog. Make sure the dog's in the barn or in the house. Because you heard shotgun shots, right? And you knew that what was going on, that the police were out there, and they come early in the morning before you get up for school.
My dog come around the corner. I was up on my mother's veranda, hanging clothes on the line. My pet JoJo come around the corner, terrified all the guns and things, the sound of the guns, right? He come around the corner, running around the corner, and the police and come right around and shot him right down in front of my feet. And that was a dangerous situation too, to do that out in Africa, because there was a lot of rock and stuff around. Shots could, the bullets could have ricocheted and killed someone, you know what I mean? But I never heard a mom and dad say that they got a notice from the city saying they were coming out to do this. They would just come out, we see them coming. If somebody had their dog around them, they could take it in the house. But if your dog was gone down over the tracks or something to, you know, roaming around, your dog, you know, they'll shoot it.
That's not even legal. That's not even legal to fire a gun off in a community where there's people, right? But they did. Yeah. They did it a lot.
Let's head back towards the fork in the road, the one we just passed. We'll take a right turn here, towards the water.
Continue along and stop at the bench where the path curves to the left.
Oh my goodness, look at that view. That's Bedford Basin. You can see it so well from where you're standing. You can hear the kids swimming, the men out fishing, and even a baptism taking place on the shore.
I came home from school and you saw somebody out in the boat, and if you wanted to go fishing, you run down to the shore and call them to come in and get you, and they'd come in and get you, and you'd go out with actually Nelson Carvery's mother, Retha. She was always fishing. Her and her family, her brothers, were always fishing. And they loved to have young kids in the boat because then you would pull the anchor right for them, right? So you sit in the front of the boat, and if you're sitting in the front of the boat, you have to pull the anchor if they're going to move to another spot, right? So, yeah. So they always wanted you out there anyway, so, and it was good fishing. And back then when we went fishing, there was only like maybe one or two people that had a boat with a motor on it. So, you know, it was rowing. You rowed the boat, pulled the anchor. Yeah, caught lots of fish, and the fish you didn't take home, you gave away to everybody else, right?
We had to cross those tracks and walk down over the hill to get to the shore to go swimming. There was a path that we used to follow to get down to go swimming.
We used to go out in the basin on a raft, and people, you know, the boys would dive in and swim. We would fish from it as well. And then if the boys didn't like us, they would throw us in. All I could see when they threw me in was the coral. They'd throw us over and we'd get back in, screaming and hollering, you know, sit on the raft and just enjoy the sun and the water.
There was a big chair, we used to call it the big chair rock, we used to swim out to and then come back in. And then we would burn tires to dry off, only to go back in again. And when the tide was low, we would put pennywinkles, mussels. Might get the odd lobster, too, if somebody went out far enough.
And then we'd cook them right on the shore. We always had a big bonfire going, and the kids stayed there probably most of the day.
We would walk down the road to the baptisms, all clad in white, our heads and everything done up, and walk down to the Bedford Basin there and be baptized. Followed the ministers down and the deacons of the church, and we walk right into that Bedford Basin and dunk us, as we would call it today, but we were baptized. We gave our heart to the Lord and was baptized walking down the road here. And people up on the hills, they'd be all looking down. You mean be up on top of the hill here, looking down this, walking down. And they'd be taking their pictures, and some cheered and clapped as they watched us walk down to the riverside. And as we walked down to the riverside, we sang. And then after that was done, we went back to the church for service.
CDU Church was central to community life in Africville, and like the rest of our homes, it was demolished by the city. Now the spirit of Africville lives on in our hearts and our memories. As you look on at the museum, which helps preserve our history, remember the folks who shaped this place. As a community, their roots run deep within the very soil, nurtured by families through the generations. It's their memories, their care, their work that sustains these very grounds you're standing on. While our journey ends here, I'll leave you with one question. What does community mean to you? Start that conversation with the staff at the Africville Museum, with your friends, your family, and neighbors. Let this experience in Africville help guide you through these conversations, to become more aware of your roots and how you can uplift those around you.